KALW.
It was so heavy that the model got to the end of the runway and just sat down.
We hear about an exhibit featuring garments by renowned Chinese designer Guo Pei.
You know, as she explains, it's just being exposed to something you've never seen before, and that Europe incited her imagination just the way the East excites Westerners.
Then we'll visit a restaurant in conservative rural California that relies on Bay Area diners.
We're outspoken liberals and tolerant of all kinds of different types of people. And the community that we live in has not been so forward in those ideas.
And we'll hear a reading from a San Francisco author, Kirsten Chin. That's coming up. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba, and this is Cross Currents. In 2015, Rihanna broke the internet when she walked down the Met Gala red carpet in a fur-trimmed golden yellow dress with a 16-foot train. Chinese couture designer Guo Pei created the iconic gown. Pei creates dreamy garments influenced by China's imperial past, along with European art. Her designs have been featured on runways around the world. Now you can see them up close in San Francisco's Legion of Honor. The exhibit is called Guo Pei, Couture Fantasy. Museum curator Jill D'Alessandro spoke with KALW's Janae Darden about the exhibit and Pei's impact on the fashion world.
Jill, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Ooh, I can't wait to talk about this beautiful exhibit and the wonderful work that you do. Where did your interest in costume and fashion come from?
Well, it's pretty deep-rooted. My father's father was actually a tailor who ended up owning clothing factories in Newark, New Jersey. And I grew up in New Jersey. So mm-hmm. I grew up with like fabrics and notions and didn't visit his factories, but visited my uncle's factories. So, and also, I mean, just being a child of the 70s, we were, you know, handcrafts was alive and well in my childhood. I learned to knit when I was, you know, 6 years old. And so it's really deep rooted.
And you brought this amazing exhibit, the Guo Pei exhibit. And I watched a video where you said her work is a combination of fashion, art, and architecture. It's funny because you talk about your grandfather, his inspiration, influence in what you do now. And her greatest inspiration was her grandmother.
Yes. Yeah. Her grandmother had an amazing impact on her. I mean, Guo Pei has just such a fascinating personal history. Growing up during the Cultural Revolution, learning to sew, again, at a very young age, because her own mother was legally blind. And again, you know, during that time period where all clothes were basically made at home, but she found great inspiration in her maternal grandmother, who grew up in a very different time at the end of the Qing Dynasty, the last imperial era in China, and who would regale young Guo Pei with these fantastic stories of beautiful silks and finely embroidered textiles. And so, yeah.
And how did the Cultural Revolution in China, how did that influence her work or influence her? I feel like her work is almost resistance to it because it's so, I really highly recommend that you see this exhibit. If you haven't seen it, it's beautiful. I mean, it's really spectacular. The garments are just, I can't even call them garments. I feel like it's something more than that. It's just the work of art that it is. It's really spectacular. But I feel like it's resistance to the Cultural Revolution.
Absolutely. I mean, I think maybe resistance or more this desire, you know, she said to me, you know, they destroyed our culture and it was for my generation to rebuild it. So she wanted to bring back these things that were lost, you know, and she's so interested in traditional craftsmanship and working with artisans and preserving or rediscovering and creating new innovations. Mm-hmm. And the majority of what's in the Guo Pei Couture Fantasy exhibition are pieces that she's created for these theatrical runway presentations. And so she has two bodies of work. She does create wearable clothes for her client base, but she is so creative, and she's so many ideas that she has a second body of work that she just does for presentation for theater. Mm-hmm. And that's what, for the majority of what's on view in the exhibition.
Okay. And she loves her culture. She's so poetic. In the interview you did with her, she said she uses her designs to express her ideas, emotions, and love. Her work is so dreamy. It's so dreamy. What else do you think is a draw to her work aside from its exquisiteness?
I think, that's a really good question. What is a draw? Definitely the techniques, but also that role of metaphor. And I feel that there's just layer upon layer of meaning and personal philosophy. And I think we were talking earlier that she's as much a philosopher. And I thought a lot about why the universal appeal of her work. And I think it draws on the fact is that she is addressing universal concepts, mm-hmm. whether it'll be nature or architecture, the afterlife, but then also has this very personal meanings to it. So, she'll make one of my favorite collections, the Olisum. It was a prayer for her father during the last months of his life that he would have a safe passage into the next world. Or she did a whole collection about when she was pregnant with her second child, An Amazing Journey in Childhood Dream. And so she's able to take these moments in her personal life and express them in this truly artistic manner, so that it's both this artist, dreamscape, but it's something that we all can relate to.
So how has the West influenced her work?
Well, I think in many ways. I think that, which is really interesting, and again, it gets back to her personal history, is that in 2000, China joined the World Trade Organization, and she was able to travel to Europe. And I think when you think about somebody who's so artistic and has such a visual stimuli, right, to go into these European museums or churches and be exposed to something that you've never seen before. And she said she was just mesmerized by the beauty. She also got to see things that she had never seen before, including maybe some Chinese art, because it had been, even prior to the Cultural Revolution, during the Boxer Rebellion, a lot of Chinese art and antiques and textiles were exported to the West. And so I think that, as she explains, it's just being exposed to something you've never seen before. And that Europe incited her imagination just the way the East excites Westerners. And so it's this kind of fusion or this fluidity of cultures influencing each other, just sharing ideas and the spread of ideology or art or philosophy.
Now she became, as far as in the West, she became more known after Rihanna wore one of her gowns?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really interesting. The scene stealer was when Rihanna wore her gown at the Met Gala and, 50-foot train and Rihanna sort of ascending the staircase is now considered one of the iconic moments of the Met Gala. And that's just wonderful. It brought, Guopei international recognition. I personally really love the fact that here you have a Bayesian artist and a Chinese designer, and now together they own one of those top spots of quintessential Met Gala moment. She actually, that piece was from a 2012 collection. So Rihanna was wearing it quite a few years after it was presented on the runway. But it was so heavy that the model just got to the end of the runway and just sat down Oh, and they had to just turn the lights down. And she, and Guope says, you know, Rihanna is such a queen. She just marched up those the next steps.
I expect nothing less from Rihanna.
Yeah.
last question. How has she inspired you as an artist, as a creator?
Yeah, I think she's very inspiring. I think just that she's really, to let your imagination lead you. I think that that's really to give into the fantasy. There's a quote right when you walk in the exhibition, is that if you lead by your fantasy, if you lead by your imagination, then you can inspire others.
That was museum curator Jill D'Alessandro speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. This interview was produced with help from Porfirio Rangel. You can visit the Guope Culture Fantasy Exhibit at the Legion of Honor. It's open until September 5th. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Suni Khalid in for Hana Baba. At the end of August last year, Mayor London Breed signed a proclamation declaring this month to be Transgender History Month, the first of its kind in the nation. And this week kicks off San Francisco's first official celebration. So today, we bring you a story from the series California Foodways about a restaurant that has worked to carve out a safe space for transgender individuals in the midst of a conservative community. Lisa Morehouse takes us to the Rosebud Cafe in this story from 2019.
Rosebuds is a place that shouts its values from its walls. Bright green paint, huge family portraits, and tons of posters and flyers announcing programs for the arts, supporting local homeless initiatives, and advocating for LGBTQ rights. At least half the customers are from out of town. They get a steady stream of visitors from Sacramento, the Bay Area, even farther away.
We're from Stockton.
Manteca.
We're from Monterey.
Owner Mary Pulskamp, Ty's mom, says that's important because Rosebuds doesn't always feel the love from all of their neighbors.
We're very grateful for city people coming out here. I mean, the big ranchers and the old families probably have blackballed us in some ways. We're outspoken liberals in this cafe, and the community that we live in has not been so forward in those ideas.
So Rosebuds has become a refuge for people who don't always feel accepted, including Mary's own family.
Rosebuds is like a beam of light.
Ty works the front of the house like he's done almost his entire life.
I started on the cash register when I was 6 years old. It's like my sibling, Rosebuds. It's like the fourth child.
His parents and aunt and uncle opened Rosebuds nearly 30 years ago. His brother, Roy Beard Kyle, is the chef.
But when the farm has a bumper crop of something, we're going to use those for sure. And there's a dialogue between the restaurant and the farm.
Happy birthday, dear Katie. Happy birthday.
Sister Megan has worked there throughout her life, but the day I visit, she's a customer celebrating a friend's birthday. Mary says the family really started supporting LGBTQ issues when Megan came out as a lesbian in high school.
In this community, it was really scary.
She worried her daughter would be bullied.
But that was just the beginning.
Because Ty stood out even more. There was the controversial neon pink baseball cap, the short hair dyed purple that provoked a teacher.
She pulled me aside on the way out to PE one day and told me that I was ruining my life. I knew then that she was wrong, but what I didn't know was how her saying that would still be a part of my consciousness 30 years later. That's obscene. I mean, I was just a fat little girl. I was just trying to be okay.
He didn't know it then, but Ty is a trans man. Playing with his look, he learned about himself. There was a mohawk, clothes cut up and pieced back together, decorated with safety pins.
For me, my parents giving us the room to express ourselves through our physical aesthetic was a matter of my survival. What else would I have done? If I couldn't cut my hair, I maybe would have been cutting myself.
He says, especially with his mom, he had a model of how to show his true self, even at church. While other families may have filled the back pews.
My family always went right to the front and sat right in that front row. Mohawk, purple hair, and all.
So I have Ashley for four.
With that family support, Ty's moved through the restaurant with ease and authority since he was a kid.
Were you up for Daffodil Hill this weekend?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Today he's wearing a kilt, his full red beard braided.
One of the neat things about having grown up in a restaurant is that I was able to feel powerful. School never felt safe, and that's not healthy for our brains.
But at Rosebuds, he saw every table of customers as a stage, and he learned his own voice. As high school began, Ty knew he was attracted to women. He presented as butch and bound his breasts.
Ty started the Gay Straight Alliance at Amador High School, and it caused just an uproar in the community.
I did not go to Glee, okay? That was not my life. School was rough.
His tires were slashed on campus.
And, I have been followed home. I have been run off the highway. I had dog shit smeared in the front seat of my car parked in front of my childhood home.
Ty and Mary both remember a downturn in customers coming to Rosebuds.
I had friends whose parents grounded them from me. So it didn't seem unusual that there were people that weren't interested in dining with us.
As high school wound down, Ty still didn't know the word transgender, but he did something really dramatic for a new teenage driver.
I cut my driver's license in half, right over the gender marker.
Soon after going off to college, Ty sat his parents down and said,
"If it's all right, I think I'd like to be your son now."
After college in Santa Cruz and a few years in Sacramento, Ty returned to Jackson. He loves the country and the rolling hills of Amador County and wanted to be part of his family's farm-to-fork efforts at Rosebuds. And coming home meant returning to the sanctuary of the restaurant.
I have experienced a great deal of trauma at points in my life where my brain was still developing.
He says he deals with PTSD and agoraphobia and went through periods when he couldn't work. So having a safe space is essential. And that's something Ty and his family pay forward. One night after closing, Rosebuds hosts a potluck for members of the Tri-County LGBT Alliance, which puts on a pride parade in nearby Murphy's. Mary welcomes the guests.
It's people like you that have made the world safer for my baby. And so I appreciate you. If you're ever scared or worried, just know that there's someone out there in the world who appreciates, and from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being an ally or for being out. And welcome.
Some here are recent arrivals to Amador County, like Richard Filia.
I like to have a little piece of land with something I can grow things on.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that in the middle of the city.
Cindy Sparks is here with her three kids.
My wife and I just decided one day we're going to move to the mountains.
From the Sacramento suburb of Elk Grove, they enrolled their kids in a one-room schoolhouse.
I found it really easy to connect with people here, which is amazing because in the city I found it less opportunities to meet people, so I love it.
16-year-old Miles goes to the youth group Ty started in the region, but is attending the potluck for the first time.
I'm basically here because, I think meeting a lot of people who are going through the same thing helps, develop, who I'm going to be when I grow up.
Miles' mom is here in support, but struggling with pronouns.
I love her to death, so, and
keep correcting, don't worry.
So whatever Miles decides to be, that's its choice. Her, his.
Him.
I still have to get used to this.
No worry, we'll get through.
And gatherings like this one at Rosebuds help.
So there is food. We have, in the tradition of my people, dessert is up front. And so if you would like to have, this is a
Ty says that's what this space is all about.
We try to use the bounty that comes through the cafe and reinfuse it right back into Jackson. You know, the saying, we are the salt of the earth, I never understood what that meant. But it was explained to me to be that we have to flavor this space, you know, and if we hold back our flavor, then we're really ripping off the universe. We are the salt.
In Jackson, I'm Lisa Morehouse for Cross Currents.
That story first aired in 2019. Asal Issanipour contributed reporting to that story. Lisa produced that for her podcast, California Foodways. And that's not the only podcast she produces. She highlights Bay Area books in her podcast, New Arrivals. Here's one about luxury handbag con artists.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Kirsten Chen lives in San Francisco. Her book, Counterfeit, came out on June 7th, 2022.
This is the story of two Asian American women who band together to grow counterfeit handbag scheme into a global enterprise, shattering the model minority myth along the way. This is the very beginning of the book. The first thing I noticed was the eyes. They were anime character huge with thick double eyelid folds, expertly contoured in coppery tones, framed by premium lash extensions, soft and full as a fur pelt. Then there was the hair, sleek yet voluminous nipple-length barrel curls, and the skin, poreless and very white, and the clothes, sumptuous silk blouse, patent Louboutins, and finally, the bag, an enormous Birkin 40 in classic orange. Back then, I wouldn't have known all these details, though, like most people, I knew those bags were absurdly expensive and impossible to obtain. All of this is just to say the woman standing in the doorway of my neighborhood coffee shop looked rich. Asian tourist rich, mainland Chinese rich, rich, rich.
That was Kirsten Chen reading from Counterfeit.
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse. You can hear more readings at kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hanisha Harjani, Sebastian Mino Buccelli, Sunday Holland, James Rollins, Gabe Graben, Victor Tentz, Shireen Adel, Shia Levitt, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Sunni Khalid.